This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Okay, what I was thinking for tonight was some community sangha practice. There are three refuges in Buddhism, three kind of main components of our practice in Buddhist practice. And one is refuge in the Buddha and knowing that we can attain liberation ourselves, that we can become a Buddha, that we can have that sort of enlightened, awakened practice of mindfulness, like the Buddha practiced, and that we can practice in this way. As I've been saying, we can change our relationship to the mind, to the body, to emotions. The second refuge is in the Dharma, which sometimes means the teachings and the kind of path or teachings of the Buddha. But more importantly, actually, the Dharma means taking refuge and commitment to finding the truth that will be revealed directly within ourselves. Knowing that all of the Dharma is revealed here in this mind and body through our own investigation. I was coming back, I was teaching in Colorado this last weekend, and on Monday I was coming back, and in the airport there was like all of these dozens, maybe, I don't know, maybe hundreds, but at least dozens of monks in the Vietnamese Zen tradition, Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, in the brown robes, and they were all over the airport when I was getting there in the morning. And then around the corner, there's Thich Nhat Hanh himself sitting there having breakfast in the airport, and all of his monks are there, and nuns, and I saw some monks and nuns that I know from teacher meetings and stuff, and Thich Nhat Hanh's over there. And anyways, I visited with them, but I was just reminded as I saw him, and just reminded now of one of his early books that I read that was so transformative and inspiring to me was a book called The Miracle of Mindfulness. And as we practice mindfulness and as we talk about the refuge of the Dharma, mindfulness is truly miraculous because it reveals the truth to us. It reveals all of the Dharma to us through present time awareness. It's not something we have to learn. It's not something we necessarily have to study. It's a practice of turning our attention towards the present moment, breath, body, mind, emotions, moods, feelings, sounds, smells, tastes. And as we do, the Dharma, the truth of impermanence, is revealed. And we come more into harmony with impermanence. Anyways, I don't want to go off, but I could go off. I am going off in that point. The third refuge, and what I wanted to do a little practice with tonight, is about community. The third refuge is in the Sangha, and a commitment to finding community and developing community as part of the practice of liberation. There can be a danger, as I was talking about earlier, in this rarefied spiritual experience of only when you're meditating a certain way, only when I'm breathing a certain way or sitting a certain way. But it's so clear that what we're looking for is a transformation in how we relate to each other, how we connect with each other, how we relate to our partners, to our family, to our friends. And there can be a danger in Buddhist circles of just coming and meditating and talking in a large group and then leaving and never really connecting, never really gaining the intimacy or support or of the community. One of the ways that I find that I connect best to people is when they tell me some truth about themselves, when they're honest with me about something that's really going on in their life or some part of their life. And likewise, when I share with someone else something that's true about myself, about my life, about my suffering, about my search and practice of finding freedom, then I feel like I have a connection with somebody. Part of that, I think, is my experience in 12-step recovery for the last 23 years and learning in that tradition from people sharing their life story, experience, strength, and hope. I'm like that even with Dharma teachers. If I go and hear a Dharma teacher and all they do is tell me about what the Buddha taught, and they don't bring any of themselves into it, I walk away feeling like, I don't know how genuine this person is. I don't know anything about it. Yes, they know what the Buddha taught. Big deal. Are they living it? Are they practicing it? How are they applying it to their lives? That's what I want to know. That's how I feel connected with people. So I want you guys to do that with each other. I'm looking for a timer. I'm going to try to model it. I'm going to ask you to speak a little bit about what brought you to meditation practice or Buddhist practice, and sort of what it's like, what it's been like, and what it's like for you now. What are you struggling with? What are you enjoying? Tell your story in 5 minutes. I'm going to model it for you and tell you my story in 5 minutes. Some of my earliest memories are of being suicidal. I'm just feeling like this deep dissatisfaction and fear and loneliness and hopelessness, and actually finding some hope in the possibility of death and escape from the pain and angst of my early childhood. I started smoking my mom's cigarettes when I was about 5. I started smoking my dad's weed when I was about 7. I ate acid when I was 10. By the time I was 12, I was getting high all of the time, started doing cocaine. As a teenager, I started shooting heroin and coke and strung out and in and out of institutions and drinking alcoholically, and enough suffering that by the time I was 17 years old and my father said, maybe you should try meditation, that I actually listened. And from a place of only a very, very little bit of hope, only a very, very, a little bit of hope. I really felt pretty hopeless, but I knew at that point that my own way had failed me. My own best ideas about what would alleviate the fear and the loneliness and the grief had not worked. None of it had worked. As I started meditating, I found some relief. A big part of what was happening for me, I was institutionalized, and a lot of what was happening for me was just the fear of prison and the future and how much time I was going to have to do and what was going to happen in court and how much violence I was going to face, and or this deep shame and regrets about the past and all of the people that I had hurt and the ways that I had hurt myself. And as I began meditating, I found some relief, at least from the future and past. Even in that jail cell meditating, it wasn't great. It didn't feel great in the present moment. I was detoxing and I was uncomfortable and sick, but it was better than the hell that my mind was creating in the future. Or you know, some of the just deep shame hell that my mind was producing about the past. And so right from the beginning, that miracle of mindfulness, the present moment, even though it sucked less than the future. And it sucked less than what my mind was saying about the past. I practice mindfulness pretty dutifully, but it was helpful, and I used it often as stress reduction and as relaxation and as avoidance of my mind. Eventually, I felt safe enough and kind of, Beth, as you were saying, brave enough to expand beyond the breath and to really start checking out what else was going on. And was deeply encouraged to also do loving kindness and compassion and forgiveness practices. And, you know, with those other meditation practices, for the first few years, I felt like they weren't working. I felt like mindfulness was something that I could grasp and get some relief from. But when I started saying nice things to myself, like I forgive you or may you be happy, I had such deep-seated self-hatred and resistance that it just felt like it was making it worse. Like I was suffering more, not less, when I did loving kindness. And it was years of doing those practices and feeling like they weren't working very well before something started to melt or get uncovered or get accessed, some compassion, some kindness. These days I suffer a lot less than I used to. But I still suffer. I still get attached and get angry and get judgmental and suffer from inflated ego or deflated sense of self. Or... it's so difficult to be in a relationship, to be married and have somebody not do what you want them to. Really a lot of suffering. And it's also such a joy to be able to tolerate somebody not doing what you want them to. And to be a parent and to be responsible. And the joy and sorrow of practice. Okay, that's 5 minutes. Can you do it? Find somebody, a partner, we'll just do a one-on-one, that you don't know. Do it with a stranger. It don't have to be like you've never seen them before, but not your homie. And this is a practice, right? Like, some people enjoy it, some people hate it. That's okay. That's more practice of like, oh, this is unpleasant. I'm resisting it. Or, I'm an attention junkie. Yes. 5 minutes. I love it. I love it when you don't talk and I just get to listen. Right? Well, it's different for everyone. And then you say, attach, only 5 minutes. I need more time. But anyways, it's a practice. And whatever your experience was with it. I know for myself, when I was in groups like this and the leader did this kind of thing, I always had a lot of resistance to it. And was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk to these people. I came here to fucking meditate. So if you had that feeling, I can relate to it. But... like you said, I actually found that doing this practice really helped me get comfortable in my own skin and get honest with myself and connect with people and normalize that, like, oh, we're all going through this. And, you know, you listen to somebody and, you know, I thought that you were like this really advanced person and you're fucked up like me. or I thought you were really fucked up and you've been meditating for 20 years. You know, or whatever it does, you know, just breaking those sort of judgments and fears and isolation that we create for ourselves. And I would imagine that Next time you see this person, next week at class, or over the months and years of coming, you'll feel a little bit more connected, at least to that one person in the room, if they're here. And that if we do this, you know, somewhat regularly, then you'll start feeling like, oh, I actually know some people there. I actually care about some people there, and they care about me. And that's really a huge intention of Sangha. A huge part of our practice is connecting and being a community and not just a sort of anonymous place where I meditate. But people who know me enough to call me on my shit, and people that I know enough to support and call on their shit. And that, of course, part of community is doing things that we don't like to do and being sometimes in conversations that are difficult and unpleasant and having conflict. And in order to be a real community, you know, there should be some difficulty in it and some annoying people. So that we have the opportunity for compassion and forgiveness. And it's so important to take off the I'm a meditator, super spiritual. I'm almost perfect. I just meditate because it's good for my health. You know that feeling you get sometimes in like spiritual circles where people are just like so fucking fake? And so, but when you start talking to people, then you realize, oh, they're not fake. When we're forced to take off the I'm okay and say, you know, I'm kind of a mess a lot of the time. But I'm trying. I'm really trying. All right. That's your Dharma for tonight. Thanks for your practice.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.